Today I'm bringing you a special interview I did with Nigel Wood. Today he's here to talk to us about his daytime job as a director of a center for autism. Nigel, in your daytime, you work with people with autism. As everybody else, I've watched The Rain Man, and I just realized I don't know very much about autism and Asperger's. I believe it is an illness that affects people's ability to interact in the way other people interact. Would you describe it in a different way?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as an illness. It's a developmental disorder, although even the word disorder is questioned these days, actually. It's seen more as difference rather than a disorder, because disorder, obviously, if you are an individual, it's not always helpful to have the word disorder attached to your label, you know, to have that label. Yeah, but it's a problem of development, which has a social aspect. It's a lot of the people I work with generally have an intellectual disability as well as their autism, and they come across quite clearly as people with a disability on the whole. Some are quite articulate and some don't speak at all, but they all have difficulties in relating to other people. And the way that generally I explain that is through what they fail to develop is empathy, which is quite a complicated thing that we learn to do at a very young age, where we learn to infer from the behavior of others that they are having feelings that we can then relate to. There we learn that we can interpret someone's behavior if they're crying or raging, or if they're exhibiting some sort of behavior like that, we infer that they are having feelings that are the same as feelings we might have, although we don't have any actual access to their direct access to their feelings, obviously. So it's an inference, that's what I'm trying to say, in rather a long-winded way. That's a very advanced piece of mental gymnastics, really. And people with autism have not managed to do that, so that other people are a closed book in some sense, and they can't read the signals of other people's behavior, or they find it very difficult to read the signals. So that makes people unpredictable as far as they're concerned, and worrying because of that unpredictability. So they may avoid other people, or they may just have very routine ways of interacting with other people, which sort of makes it sort of very standard and routine, so they don't have to really engage with other people that much.
So would you say that they actually feel emotions? Are the emotions blocked within themselves, or is there a way of knowing?
That's difficult to say. The predominant emotion that I see, or that I infer from the people I look after, is anxiety. They're definitely very anxious. And when I'm talking to people that come to visit our centre, I always stress that anxiety underlies an awful lot of behaviour in those people. They're very anxious about the future, actually. Their ability to predict is very limited. And I can understand that, you know, other people are a problem because of their lack of empathy, as I've described. But they find it very difficult to assume that things are going to happen in a routine way. Routine is incredibly important to them, and that's sort of connected, I suppose. It's all about their security. But they need a lot of reassurance that we're going to do. In the centre, we maintain a routine of activities to some extent. Not completely, but to some extent. We go swimming every Monday, for instance. Several of my clients want to check, you know, and it's very important to them that they have to check all the time that we're going to be going swimming this coming Monday, even though we go swimming every Monday. And there's a big level of anxiety about that, about what is coming up and what is going to happen. And, you know, the whole worldview is very insecure, and it appears to be very insecure. And they don't seem to be able to rely on things in the same way that people without autism do constantly, you know, assume that things are going to kind of run the same as they always do. They don't seem to have that. They need a lot of reassurance to manage those things.
So, Nigel, I was wondering, if you're working with people who have autism or Asperger at various degree, how difficult is it to actually access these people, to connect with them? Is it absolutely impossible? Are we banging our heads off the wall? Or is there a way in?
We're not going to cure them. Autism, I don't think, can be cured. And even modern thinking now is that, you know, it would be wrong even to talk about a cure, you know, that we're not... We're talking about people who are different, who see the world differently. And they don't see the world primarily in terms of relationships. Really, the way to connect with autistic people is, firstly, I think, to accept that they're not going to connect in the way that you or I expect people to connect. They might, you know, they may engage in other ways. They're not necessarily going to engage in, you know, what is primarily a relationship type of way, to do with feelings and, you know, connection of the heart and the... I'm not saying that they can't, I'm just saying that that's unlikely to be a primary connection. But they might engage, they might connect very well intellectually, and there is, you know, there's quite a bit of evidence now that some people who have achieved greatness in certain spheres may be autistic. There was, you know, there was a book written not so long ago which looked at various historical figures, Eamon de Valera, Samuel Beckett, people like that, and retrospectively diagnosed them as in some, you know, somewhere on the autistic spectrum. The theory seems to be that, you know, people, because I mean, you could say that most of us who are not autistic, you could say that you know, we're too caught up in the relationship, the feeling aspect of relating to other people, that we're over preoccupied. You know, we're a bit like sort of, you know, teenagers who are over preoccupied with relationships and who's going out with who and all that. And that these people who are autistic, high ability autistic people, are they're free, because they're not so engaged in that, they're free to develop their considerable brain power to some sort of intellectual pursuit, or it could be an artistic pursuit, or, you know, whatever their special thing is. And that has enabled some people to achieve greatness in certain fields because they focus all their mental energy on that area, and they're not distracted by the distractions that so, you know, engage the rest of us, you know, so that we're unable to focus maybe on our careers or whatever it is, you know, whatever the thing is that we should be doing. So in terms of reaching to the person with autism, perhaps we just have to look at the way that we're trying to reach them, you know, and engage with them in a different way. I'm well used to, with the population of people that I look after who are, you know, intellectually disabled as well, you know, I'm well reconciled to the fact that I'm not going to make a sort of a close feeling connection with any of those people. I'm not under any illusions about that at all. And the way I engage with them is through, you know, participation in their routines, recognizing their anxiety, making allowances for that. That's the way, you know, it's in those ways, and, you know, helping them with various activities. They're the ways that I engage with them. And that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's as deep as it's going to go. With people that are more able, maybe of normal intelligence, it's a little more nuanced. You could make a deeper connection of some sort, but it might be intellectual, you know, rather than feelings. I'm sort of speculating about that because I haven't worked with a lot of people with very high functioning autism or Asperger's. I haven't worked with them in any detail, so I'm kind of speculating about it. But that's the way, I think, you know, the whole thrust of the approach towards autism now is about recognizing difference, rather than talking about disorders or, you know, people not measuring up to our standards in some way. It's like seeing them as just different and, you know, having their own way of looking at things.
And acceptance.
And acceptance, indeed, yeah.
What word of advice would you give to family or friends of people who maybe have milder form of autism, who are feeling a bit hurt maybe because all their attempt at reaching to them seems to fail?
Well, I would say to them just to take a different viewpoint on that, really. Not to be too caught up in their way of assessing the situation, but to see, I mean, I can remember something that's just come into my head is remembering my own father. He's not very expressive, you know, in terms of saying what he feels about me. And I remember realizing, you know, when I was maybe, I don't know, a long time ago now, maybe in my 30s or something, that, you know, the way that he asked after my travel arrangements when I went over to visit him and sort of like helped me and sort of suggested ways of traveling or routes to drive there or whatever it was, that all of that was the way he exhibited his caring about me. You know, he wasn't going to be very explicit in his caring about me, but the way that he put effort into helping me with my journey in some way was, you know, and I remember realizing at some point, you know, this is how he's showing that he cares about me. And I think it's in the same way that you can look at the autistic person and, you know, just not assess your relationship with them only in the light of your own expectations, but to see that they may relate to you in a different way and just see the world differently, so they don't put the same value, or they're, you know, because of the maybe the difficulties around empathy, they're not going to put the same value on those things. You know, you just have to find a different way of assessing it. So I'd say just to examine your own viewpoint about it, really.
Thank you very much, Nigel. It's now time for meditation, as we do each week. If you're at home, make yourself as comfortable as possible. Close your eyes. Part your lips just enough to release your jaws and bring your awareness to the breath. Notice the depths of the breath and the regular rhythm in and out of your body. Notice the gentleness of your breath, the warmth of your breath, the positive vibrations the breath brings into your body. With each breath comes prana. With prana comes life. With life comes energy. With energy comes vitality. With vitality comes joy. With joy comes renewal. With renewal comes abundance. With abundance comes peace. With peace comes oneness. Breathe in all these positive qualities within yourself. As you breathe out, allow a wave of gratitude to expand from you and to reach out all around you. Expressing your gratitude for all the gifts in your life, those you've taken for granted, those you didn't even notice were there. The gift of life, your body, food, clothing, shelter, warmth, people who care, people who help. Grateful for your senses and all your feelings and emotions. Grateful even for the challenges in your life. They help you make you into the strong person you are. Grateful for your vulnerability, your tenderness, your compassion, grateful for the ability becoming whole.